Retro Nerd.
Entering the hive of scum and villainy.
I love democracy.
We shall have order!
The Imperial Senate will no longer be of any concern to us.
My allegiance is to the Republic, to democracy!
Rebellions are built on hope.
Your focus determines your reality.
Luke, you're going to find that many of the truths we cling to depend greatly on our own point of view.
Hello there, and welcome to Beltway Banthas, a Star Wars podcast live from the hive of scum and villainy in our very own galaxy, Washington, D.C. I'm your host, Stephen Kent, and this is an episode built on hope, my friends. Star Wars is built atop a few bedrocks, virtues, and I guess you could call them values that offer the moral foundation of the Star Wars universe and the stories that get told. So up to this point, Star Wars under George Lucas and Disney Corporation, it has adhered to, I think, this foundation. And it's made the stories both colorful and consistent, or maybe recognizable might be the better word. Like among those things, the bedrocks are the virtue of humility, of courage, the value of community and family, either biological or chosen, the power of empathy, seeing beneath another person's mask or their inherent traits. Balance is a virtue of Star Wars. And of course, there is hope, what I mentioned right at the start here. Rebellions are built on it. Despots are threatened by it. Children are born with it, and adults, people like myself, have a unique way of losing it. We lose sight of hope. A lot of times we have damn good reason to lose our hope. But nevertheless, hope is like oxygen. You always have to have some, or you'll remain in stasis, maybe stuck in bed and hiding from whatever the day is going to hold. I don't know about you, but I myself was in a season of pretty deep depression at the end of 2020. I talked about it a bit on this show in December, an episode right around Christmas. Actually, no, it was New Year's, right around New Year's about that. I just shut down, people. I just was toasted. There was the weight of the news of the pandemic and then of my responsibilities, which had just become too much. And I was totally crippled by the polar opposite of this thing called hope, which is fear. You'd think it is despair, but despair has a foundation of its own. And that is whatever you're fearful of. And those can be small or large things. There's this, this is a quote by John Meacham, the presidential historian and a regular recurring pundit on MSNBC's Morning Joe. It's from one of his books. I'm forgetting which book it is at the moment, but I had made a note of the quote and I really love it. It goes like this: the opposite of fear is hope, defined as the expectation of good fortune, not only for ourselves, but for a group to which we belong. Fear feeds anxiety and produces anger. Hope, particularly in a political sense, breeds optimism and feelings of well-being. Fear is about limits. Hope is about growth. Fear casts its eyes warily, even shiftily across the landscape. Hope looks forward to the thing around the next corner, toward the horizon. Fear points at others, assigning blame. Hope points ahead, working for a common good. Fear pushes away, and hope pulls closer. Fear divides and hope unifies. That's the quote from John Meacham, presidential historian. So this past year, where we are now, we're in July 2021. COVID-19 is in retreat, not entirely, but just about everyone here listening to this, I think you have probably had the opportunity to eat out in a restaurant again. The opportunity, not saying you take it or that you took it. You probably had the opportunity to go grocery shopping with the option to go maskless. That's because the pandemic is over. I say that because pandemic is a status, not a permanent state of being. But the effects of it are here to stay for a long time. Hope was challenged in 2020, and obviously in the years before, it has always been challenged, like the opioid crisis should ring a bell as one example. But hope is like the sun. If you only believe in it when you see it, you will never make it through the night. That is Princess Leia, quoted by Admiral Holdo in The Last Jedi. It is a late addition to the Star Wars moral canon, but that line, like, it just feels like it has been with Star Wars the whole time, which I imagine is why it was written and included in Episode 8, because it just feels so quintessentially Star Wars. In my upcoming book, called How the Force Can Fix the World, Lessons on Life, Liberty, and Happiness from a Galaxy Far, Far Away, I zero in on hope as central to the Star Wars story because it's the driving force of the rebellion against the Empire. Hope fuels social change. Hope arms the people of the galaxy with a sense that life can be better, that they could actually be free. It's vital. It's why when Leia receives the Death Star plans at the end of Rogue One, she's asked by a rebel soldier, what is it that they now have in their possession? And she calls the Death Star plans just hope. Even though possession of those plans is a literal death sentence. Having those plans means they will be hunted down and killed unless they put them to some kind of use, or they might get killed anyways. Having them in her hands marks her for death by the state, but so does life under imperial authoritarianism. All right? They're doomed either way, in a sense. Hope is a delicate balance and dance with fear. The light at the end of the tunnel, for example, it's a powerful rhetorical device. You've heard it before. I use it all the time. I think I even said it once already in this episode, the idea of the light at the end of the tunnel. But the whole point of that rhetorical device is that you don't know what's there at the light. It's just white light and your vision being washed out by the blinding white light because you've been lost in the dark and wandering in these tunnels. And at the end of the tunnel, whether it be like a season of your life, depression, a loss, anything, it could be a dragon just sitting there waiting to gobble you up right when you stick your head out of the tunnel. Or it could be a nuclear wasteland outside of the tunnel. Or Darth Vader standing there with his red lightsaber like he was at the end of the tunnel in Rogue One. Or the end of the ship tunnel. Hallway. I was losing the word. The hallway. On the ship. But in theory, you have to make it out of the tunnel. Like, that's the whole point of the metaphor, is you want to be out of the tunnel. You want to be out in the world enjoying life and all of its fruits and prosperity, and you want to be enjoying the light because we are human beings. Therefore, hope and that light has to be better than life inside the tunnel. And your version of what could be out there and how it could be better has to be something that you can actually hold and feel and not let slip between your fingers. Otherwise, you would opt to colonize the dark tunnel. You would adapt and master the darkness or your despair, depression, your angst. You can believe that there's another way to live, maybe a better way. I mean, I don't know about you, but my wife has bipolar type 2. And it took her years, we've been married for 10 years now, together for 15, to choose medication over adaptation to the darkness that she was wandering. Now, we're several years in on, you know, life with medication and always trying out new doses and new stuff. One of the natures of bipolar is that you just have to, like, adjust your medication all the time. It really stinks. But now she can see the world in full color most days because she had hope and took a little bit of a leap of faith that there might be something better than what she was doing on her own and suffering on her own. I know a lot of you out there deal with the same kind of thing. This clash of hope and despair is why you have a divided rebel alliance. It is why you have this guy, Saw Gerrera, played by Forrest Whitaker, and the Partisans and the Dreamers, one of the offshoots of the Partisans after Saw Gerrera dies in Rogue One, now included in the Star Wars canon. Because in fighting the Empire, you obviously have a right to some moral outrage. The Empire is evil and oppresses people. They are evil. Totalitarian, fascistic, bad. And it's okay to feel anger about it. Like Star Wars, you know, tells you to not embrace anger or to reject it. But like one of the things about that is like the Jedi reject anger. They don't like acknowledge that you don't feel it. It's okay to feel anger. The question Star Wars asks fans to grapple with is whether or not that anger is going to be a passing feeling or if it's going to be their lifeblood. Sith use it as their lifeblood. Saw Gerrera lives on his anger about the Order of the Galaxy and injustice. I mean, his sister was killed in the Clone Wars resisting the Separatist armies, and Saw lived on to see the Republic become the bad guys by the end of the war. So for him, the Alliance to Restore the Republic is a bunch of crock. It's just a return to the status quo that allowed for the Empire to rise in the first place. Mon Mothma, like, she has this governing agenda and vision of the future. Gerrera doesn't see beyond smashing stormtroopers, right? He doesn't see beyond bombing Imperial tanks, inflicting damage, and making a point about injustice. And freedom is what wakes him up in the morning. But of course, he has not been shown to have a clear idea of what to build in place of the evil that he wants to end or stop. This is the kind of thing we need to be watching out for in our own world. Idealistic arsonists, people who burn things down because they are angry, smash through doors because they feel isolated or alienated. They're eager to tear things down with little or no guardrails or discipline when it comes to talking about what comes next. That's how you get gulags. That's how you get a ransacked Capitol building. I have a guest today on the show. He wrote an article for freethepeople.org that I saw a couple of days ago and I really loved. It's about the rising tide of despair and doom-mongering that characterizes online life, the news, and increasingly just like our political lives out in the real world, in the streets. And when I say I loved the article, I mean, obviously I loathe the fact that it needs to be written. But, you know, you read something and you're like, wow, that hits home. That resonates. That is true. So all these things that I just mentioned, the fear-mongering, the doom attitude, it's all resulted in a high tide of suicide, self-harm, drug abuse, gun violence, political discord. And on a small scale, this matters because every single life has value and every person falls prey, or who falls prey to despair and ends their life, is a tragedy for us all. But on a big scale, the big picture, the social disorder that comes with everything I just described is blood in the water for would-be totalitarians who will promise to fix everything, promise to make everything better, to bring order, purpose, meaning, or status to people who feel like they no longer have it or never had it. We are all susceptible to this. All of us. Some of us have more latent totalitarian instincts, and some of us have them more in the out front of our personality because we want things to be ordered. We're all susceptible. Finding hope in leaders and movements that promise us something, it can start in a good place. It can start in a place of virtue, a just place, and it can still go very, very bad. That is the Star Wars story of the prequels. That is the lesson of those movies. I think a lot of people get really hung up on whether or not Star Wars is like a left or right tale. It's just like this very Americanistic notion and self-centered idea that like Star Wars is all based on American politics and George Lucas's view of the liberal and conservative paradigm, as if those things don't constantly change and reorder themselves and get redefined. based on the decades in which we live. It's an incredibly narrow way to talk about Star Wars. And when people ask me, Stephen, what are the politics of Star Wars? I'm like, Star Wars is anti-authoritarian. That is what Star Wars is. Star Wars is a story about how everybody thinks they're the good guy, and it is a question of how far you are willing to go to do the things that you consider to be good for most people. Palpatine is an example of how evil exists. Like, evil is always there. Like, not everything is subjective. There are some people who are legitimately, objectively, and happily evil. But most people are Anakin. Most people are Anakin. They have a big, big heart, and they want to see people be happy. But they convince themselves that a couple eggs need to be smashed for the greater good. All right. I have a guest today. I mentioned the writer from freethepeople.org. I will be joined in just a moment by Logan Albright to talk about hopelessness and its many faces and how Star Wars, the story of a galaxy far, far away, offers us something better. I apologize for all the sound in the background, by the way. I'm trying out recording in my basement. I've built like a little studio space, but if somebody decides to take a shower, I guess all the sound from the pipes is just like overwhelming. So maybe it sounds like rain to you, and maybe it's soothing. I hope. Logan Albright of FreeThePeople.org, and he is a author of a relatively new book. Logan, remind people what the title of your book is.
Why, thank you, Stephen. Yeah, I've got a book coming out later this year. It's called Conform or Be Cast Out. You can see it behind me. I have a copy here. And it's about the literal demonization of nonconformists. So it's about people who throughout history have been a little bit different, and we know that people don't like people who are different than them and try to tear them down. But this book is specifically about the ways in which the powers that be have identified people who are different with literal evil, with devil worshipers, with witches, with all these other kind of supernatural concepts, these personifications of evil. So that's what the book is about. It's going to be released on December 1st through Moon Books, and pre-orders are available now through Amazon.com or wherever.
Man, you cranked out another book. Good on you, man.
Thank you.
Yeah, and your last book was Our Servants, Our Masters.
Yep, that's available still through Amazon. It's and through the Free the People website. And yeah, that was about the kind of myth of the public servant, how so many people who call themselves public servants are actually trying to control you and run your life.
I love democracy.
Isn't it great?
I'm just a humble servant of the Republic here to here to do the will of the people, not... as you know, Logan, my kind of angle here is Star Wars on my channel and the Beltway Banthas podcast. So we're going to be kind of talking and interweaving very naturally Star Wars stuff throughout. But I wanted to hand it off to you because you wrote this piece called Hopelessness is the Greatest Challenge of Our Time. And it was a gut punch. It rang incredibly true. And if I could read your introduction, just like the first paragraph, it goes, new data from the Centers for Disease Control reveal that the mortality rate for young adults is higher than it's been in nearly 70 years, coming on the heels of a global pandemic. Perhaps this is not surprising, but when you drill down into the numbers, it turns out that COVID is not primarily what's been driving the increase in deaths. Instead, Americans aged 25 to 34 are increasingly falling prey to drug overdose, suicides, alcoholism, domestic violence. In other words, these deaths are mostly self-inflicted. They're what we call deaths of despair, personal pain, and most importantly, in Logan's view, as he says, hopelessness. Give me more of your premise beyond that. What are you seeing as like the driving force of people just not believing that there's a tomorrow to live for?
Yeah. So I've been thinking about this for a long time, and it's something that's been bothering me. And I think it's kind of at the root of a lot of the social discord, if not all the social discord that we see these days. I feel like young people have a very nihilistic view of the world. And I think that's at the root of all the riots you see, all the wanting to just tear down systems, wanting to just destroy things. And excuse me. I think it's due to the fact that we have trained them through the media, through schools, through the way that the information that young people get. We've trained them to believe that the world is a terrible place and that it's getting worse and that it's not going to get any better. There's no hope for the future. And I give like a laundry list in that article of all the stuff that we tell young people. We tell them that the we've destroyed the climate and an imminent global catastrophe is just around the corner. We tell them that you are poorer than your parents and your grandparents. You can't afford to buy a home, which is not really true, but people believe it. We tell them that you can't go outside because the global pandemic is going to kill you. We tell them that everybody's a racist and everybody's a bigot. And if anyone disagrees with you, it's because they're a white supremacist. And like this whole list of things we tell people where you just have no way of kind of grabbing onto something to believe in and to hope for. And I think it's easy to forget that, like, as adults who've lived in the world for a while, we can be kind of cynical and we can sort of laugh at what the media says and be like, oh yeah, that's what the news does. They fearmonger. Yeah. But when you're like 10
if
years
it bleeds,
old,
it leads. Yeah.
Yeah. When you're like 10 years old, you don't know that. You're supposed to trust the adults in your life. They're the source of authority. And so if your parents and your school teachers and everyone you're around tells you that things are this bad, you're going to believe it's this bad. And like, I always think about the speech that Greta Thunberg gave, and everyone kind of made fun of her for being overwrought and, like, you know, so hysterical about climate change. But it's like, what do you expect if you tell a young teenager that the world is coming to an end and it's all everybody's fault? They're going to be just desperately upset about that, and they're going to be hysterical about that. And I feel bad for people like that. I feel bad that we put children in that position.
Yeah, it's exactly what a person should do. If the world is ending, you should be screaming at the United Nations.
Yeah,
and exactly. You should be screaming at world leaders like, shame on you. Yeah. You've stolen my childhood. You know, at debate is whether or not like it is actually ending. And I want to back up a little bit to the bit about young people, because there's a widely understood thing about teenagers and people in their early 20s. You know, they kind of live like there's no tomorrow. They're a little reckless. There's a sense of invincibility mixed with a sense of being rudderless. So they do things that are kind of irrational, don't make sense, irresponsible choices. And then also a kind of a stroke.
Your microphone's cutting out again.
All right, back. I'll have to switch out this microphone. This isn't working. But like, young people are kind of like this, and then they grow out of it. My sense of what helps young people grow out of that phase of their life, because it's just part of being human, is kind of like believing that nothing matters, is they end up having like families. they end up having kids, and that gives them like this thing to live for. Some people substitute careerism for that. Some people go all in on a relationship with God and the pursuit of life after death as the thing that gives them purpose. But you're familiar with like the commentary, particularly that comes from the right, that like we've been infantilized as a people. And it kind of then it all makes sense, like the infantilization of Americans and people extending their childhoods for too long, the decline of religion. Of course, we would believe in nothing, or that we are constantly headed towards doom.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of truth to that. I think the infantilization is a real problem. People just want to be taken care of instead of embracing responsibility. And I think that's why you see the appeal of someone like Jordan Peterson, who really preaches responsibility. I think there's a lot of appetite for that now. But even more than that, I think that a cure for hopelessness is perspective. And there's a couple different kinds of perspective you can have. One is like a horizontal perspective, where you look at the wider world and see what people have to put up with in other countries. And there's like a vertical perspective, where you look back in time and see what people had it, how bad people had it just like two generations ago.
Yeah. And libertarians are big on like this human progress gospel. Like I've talked about it a little bit, and I have some issues with it. I think there's a way that you can challenge a little bit like human prosperity gospel and be like, things are always better, therefore you should just be happy. With like, is this the meaning of life? Because like Amazon, like, right, it's an example of incredible human progress, huge wealth creation, and rising living standards. But there's like this dark side of it, which is like, do we really want to have robots do everything for us and like take away a lot of the things that we used to do for work, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a point to be made there for sure, but like rising living standards certainly don't hurt. I mean, it's nice to have rising living standards. It's nice not to be starving to death and worrying where your next meal is going to come from, or worrying about how you're going to put a roof over your head.
Worrying about how good the past was is only a thing you can worry about when you're comfortable.
Right.
Yeah, otherwise you're always thinking just about tomorrow, hand to mouth.
But you're right. I mean, it's not sufficient. You also have to have purpose in your life in addition to perspective. And I've just been reading Boethius's The Consolation of Philosophy, which is a great book that I recommend to everybody, because it not only gives you great perspective on how much worse things could be and how you should be grateful for what you have, but it also kind of teaches you to find happiness within and find purpose within and not look to exterior things for that, which I think is a really important point that a lot of people could benefit from, because I think you make a great point about materialism, and it's not just about having more things. Having more things doesn't necessarily make you happy, but, you know, finding some way to make sense of your life and have order in your life and have purpose in your life is where happiness comes from.
Yeah. There's, I think one of the things that you're touching as well on is the worry wart culture. So just being afraid. And in my book, How the Force Can Fix the World, it comes out in October. I chose not to start with coronavirus and like write about COVID-19 as like the panic culture piece of evidence. I think it obviously would fit, but I was like, I think people might want a break and a little like something with a little more shelf life than this pandemic. And so I ended up writing about the Free State Project and when I went to Porkfest. And Porkfest is this like libertarian event up in New Hampshire where everybody gets together and camps out for a couple of weeks, and then they get a pitch on why they should move to New Hampshire. and it's a great libertarian event. But I learned about free-range parenting at that event. And it's the simple and radical concept that your children should go outside and play amongst each other unsupervised. And you don't need to worry so much that like there's not a killer clown, serial killer, or abductor around every single tree waiting at every single park with a van to snatch your children. But we've like really like bought that idea wholesale since the 1970s and 80s. And even after the huge like disappearance of the serial killer, we still live in the panic. Just like we still live in the post 9/11 world and let ourselves get patted down by TSA agents in incredibly gross ways because we're afraid of shoe bombers. Like once you let in the fear, it just stays.
Absolutely. And you teed me up nicely there because I've got a chapter in my new book about the satanic panic in the 70s and 80s.
Nice.
Where people are seeing devil worshipers around every corner. And it's totally damaging. It's destructive to people's lives. It's destructive to the way that we, you know, our psychology, our way that we live our lives. And I just got back from Porkfest and it was wonderful to be around this atmosphere of total absence of fear. Everybody there was just chill and relaxed and having a good time. And nobody was afraid of the virus and nobody was afraid of anything. And it was so nice because I live in Washington, D.C., and it's just like crazy hyped up fear all the time around here. I think it's people have gone nuts. And yeah,
the barriers around the Capitol just came down like yesterday.
True. Yeah.
Yeah.
The way people are just overprotective with their kids, as you say, with free range parenting. And yeah, and you mentioned earlier about how young people are like reckless. And I don't know that that's so much the case anymore. I think it traditionally has been the case, but all the young people I know are uncharacteristically cautious. I find it very odd. Mm-hmm. I know all these people in their 20s and they're like home by 9 p.m. every night so that they can get up for work the next day. They don't go out drinking and they don't smoke and they don't do drugs and they don't do any of the stuff that people used to do when they were young. And there's probably some benefit to that, you know, for health reasons. But on the other hand, it's kind of sad to see people who are so young be so cautious so early instead of.
Yeah. And I think one of the main characters of that archetype like goes back to in pop culture, James Dean's Rebel Without a Cause, huge kind of inspiration for like the Han Solos of the world in terms of fiction. You know, it's the archetypal young male who, you know, kind of hates the man and hates his dad and wants to change the world, but mostly is just not content with himself. He has no actual cause besides the things that he's opposed to. And I end up writing, I've ascribed this title as well to like Saw Gerrera in Star Wars Rogue One. It's the rebel who hates the Empire and just wants to kill stormtroopers because they are bad. But you could never trust someone like that to build things. Mm-hmm. I think it's incredibly powerful. And I think I take completely what you said about young people being incredibly bubble wrapped by choice these days. And it's like a combination of the video game and online culture. You and I grew into internet culture rather than being born in it. So we kind of knew the world beforehand. I mean, but like, I just think about like the numbers on, kids having premarital sex, right? Like teenagers having premarital sex. Those numbers are incredibly down. Teenagers are having less sex. That's insane to me. but it's because like you can't have sex unless you're out in the world meeting people. And conservatives kind of like always look at this as like, this is good. Abortion rates are down because teenagers are having less unplanned pregnancies. But they're kind of like ignoring the fact that like teenagers are killing themselves at higher rates. And it's like, well, which one of these outcomes is socially conservative? People who go out and experience the world and all its messiness, or people who hide inside and hurt themselves?
Well, for a long time, we've kind of made fun of Japan for having this culture where in their basements with their body pillows and their video games, and they don't ever like date or do anything. And I worry that that's the future of the United States, because it seems like we're headed in that direction.
No, I think it is. I mean, I think we're catching up with them rapidly. And I remember exactly the kind of articles you're talking about. It's like we've long made fun of China for like their service robots, and they have like little helpers in the house. That it's amazing the kind of technology that they're already using there. And then there's also like the sex robots, right? Like it is the actual
sex robots.
The robots and like the sex robot brothels that have already taken off in a huge way.
Futurama predicted years ago that the sex robots will be the end of civilization. And I think they may have been onto something.
Yeah. I mean, you think about like, what are the main drivers of human existence? And I know one of them would be sex. I'm not sure what the other one would be, but if you take the desire to have sex with other people off the table, who knows what will happen? I mean, that it's just all downhill from there. But there will be people who tell us that it's good because we're creating less human beings. Therefore, we are saving the planet. You know that this narrative is going to get out at some point. Somebody will make that argument.
Well, I know people who are actually unironically saying, I'm not going to have kids because I don't want to bring a child into this world.
I know those people too.
And I'm like, that's just so sad to me that you have that attitude. Like, there's so much goodness to offer in the world, so many things to experience, and you're just going to deprive someone of that because you think the world is bad. The world's not bad. Like, there's bad stuff that happens, sure. But like, on balance, it's pretty great to be alive, I think.
Yeah, it is great to be alive. It is great to be alive. What's the answer? I mean, what is the answer to hopelessness and despair as far as you see it? Because I think your advice is going to be blunt as always.
Well, it's hard to know like a widespread answer for everybody. But I think it's perspective. And you talked about how we kind of grew up with the internet kind of emerging. And I think we learned as we saw the internet emerge not to take it very seriously. Like, oh yeah, that's just stuff on the internet. That's
people lie on the internet.
People lie on the internet. And I think nowadays people are born into it and they think that everything they see on the internet is real. And that the lives they see depicted on Instagram are real, and the lives they see depicted on Facebook are real. And we know they're not, but I think young people don't know they're not. And so like, I just think having more understanding of what the larger world is like and how people actually live is a great way of doing it. And if you were a parent, I would advise you to tell your kids, you know, don't take everything so seriously. Like, yeah, that's what people say online, but that's not real. Don't worry about that so much. Because I think that people just get in this narrow little worldview. And if we were bringing it back to Star Wars, I think that's the situation that Luke was in the beginning of A New Hope. You know, he's on this desert planet with his aunt and uncle doing moisture farming, and they've told him that's all there is. Just worry about that. There's nothing else. And then he, as Obi-Wan Kenobi says, he takes his first steps into a larger world, and that's when he really starts to get hopeful and starts to have something to live for and to fight for, having this broader perspective on the universe. And I think that's what people need. They need a broader perspective on the world and realize that not every problem you see in the United States is the worst thing in the world. And that not every problem means we need to just destroy the entire system and tear everything down. It's an evolving process, and it's gotten better over time, and it's going to continue to get better. And it's gotten better compared to what's happening in other countries. And, you know, just because you see injustice in the United States, which there certainly is, there's tons of injustice in the United States, that doesn't mean that we can make it better by just destroying everything.
Yeah. I mean, in your piece, I think you deliver the answer very quickly. And it kind of speaks to what you're saying here, which is if you want teenagers to stop slitting their wrists, drinking themselves to death, obliterating their realities with hard drugs, just stop lying to them. Just stop lying to them. We all know that this is the safest time in human history to be alive. Like, we know it, but we have to be afraid of some kind of dragon, some kind of bogeyman, so that we can have something to slay or something to virtue signal about how there's danger.
There's sort of two ways to think about it too. And I was reading the chapter you sent me from your new book, which you should plug, about hope in the Star Wars universe. And I think, you know, there's this kind of spiritual way to think about hope. And when things are just really terrible and everything is bad, and you have to find hope within yourself in spite of how bad everything is. And I always think about this quote by G.K. Chesterton, who I love. And he says that when things are hopeful, hope is sort of meaningless and it's a platitude and it doesn't really accomplish anything. But hope is really a strength when things become really hopeless. That's when you really need hope, is when things are really hopeless. And there's that way to think about hope, which I think is important. But the more kind of practical way to think about it is, well, what about when things aren't hopeless, when things are actually pretty good? And that's where I think we are now. Things are actually pretty good, although they could be better. But we shouldn't just despair, because there's nothing to despair about. You know, if things were really that bad, then I would still be preaching hope. Try to find it within yourself somewhere. But things aren't that bad, and we need to kind of recognize that. And people just get in their little bubbles of social media and they think everything is that bad because that's what they're told over and over again. But I think just the truth, you know, sunlight is a disinfectant, as they say. Let the truth come out and show how good everything is, and people will feel better about it.
So what I want to push you on one thing. So one thing that I think you talk a lot about, you could even say preach a lot about, with these kind of ideas about hope and how the world is doing really well right now. Humankind is at its peak in terms of comfort, luxury, all those good things. One of the things that I hear a lot in libertarian politics, particularly as it pertains our freedoms, you know, being an American, our rights, that has never been worse. that there is an element in libertarian ideology and just like the movement in general. They're like, yeah, man, we have become slaves. We are not free. The government is impossibly large. There is sort of like an element of like the battle is lost there as well. And yeah, how do you square those two things?
Libertarianism is not immune from this hopelessness, for sure. And I think there's different aspects of life that you can look at, right? You can look at health and technology and medicine, longevity, infant mortality, crime rates, and say everything's as good as it's ever been. And at the same time, you can still say, well, this one area of society is worse than it used to be. We need to fix that. And I think that's fair enough. You can do that, but that doesn't have any kind of cause to be hopeless about things. And I think we can overstate how bad things are as libertarians and overstate how oppressed we are, because we're not that oppressed compared to other countries. But at the second time, you don't want to be complacent either, right? Even though things are great, you don't want to just sit back and just coast, because things can get worse and you need to be vigilant against that. And I think that's what we're trying to do. But yeah, I mean, you have a good point. People are a little bit overly dramatic about these things sometimes.
Yeah, I think the rotten fruit of complacency is part of the rise of the empire, where you have like the republic at its peak. It's like peak opulence, and then also sort of peak, how would you phrase it? Like political gridlock in the republic, where everything is believed to be so good and so stable, there's not a sense of what could go wrong. And when you lose the perspective of how quick this democracy that has been around for centuries and is being helmed by Chancellor Valorum, how vulnerable it actually is at all times to falling apart, even though the Republic has been around for so long, that is when you are most at risk of somebody creating chaos, creating panic, and then flipping the table on this thing that is centuries old, whether it be democracy in the Republic, or whether it be 65 years of the American Republic. Mm-hmm. Complacency can be just as dangerous as constant panic.
Yeah. And, you know, Murray Rothbard had this thing about being a happy warrior. And I think that's really important to be. You can fight for justice and fight to improve things and fight to fend off the evil of the world. But don't do it in a hopeless sort of way. Don't do it in a nihilistic sort of way. That's the big difference between, I think, like some of the Antifa protesters who are, they claim they're fighting for justice, but they're doing it in such a nihilistic way. They just want to tear everything down. They're not trying to build better things. And being a happy warrior, like I like to think I am, and I try to be in the libertarian circles, is you point out where things are bad. You point out where the government is creating injustices that are hurting people. And you say, we need to stop those. We need to fight them. But at the same time, you're grateful for what you have, and you try to have a cheerful outlook on life.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's why Saw Gerrera's, you know, faction within the rebellion didn't take off. That's why people follow Mon Mothma and follow Leia mm-hmm. in Star Wars, is because they believe in these people who are actually offering a vision of the future, not just a short and angry life of smashing the fash helmets, you know, like taking out stormtroopers. Like it's kind of a dead end ideology. You know, one of the things that I point to in How the Force Can Fix the World is the racial tension of the summer of 2020 and the protests and riots that came in the wake of the murder of George Floyd in Minneapolis. The Black Lives Matter movement took off in a huge way, and demonstrations peaked in June of 2020, and support for their cause was measured by Pew Research in the beginning of that as sitting around 67% for adults. A clear majority of people in the country were on board and supported the idea of Black Lives Matter when those protests were at their peak. But by September, so we're skipping, you know, 2 or 3 months to when things have started to eke over into burning down Targets and, you know, looting shoe stores and stuff like that. By September, that support had dropped 29%, as reported by Pew, now down to 38% of adults. It is worth noting that that was a huge drop in white support, not necessarily black support, but the movement loses its cohesive steam if it can't keep all of the groups together that is needed to be a majoritarian movement of the people.
Yeah, that movement needed a goal. And they were just angry about injustice, which they have right to be. And I have a lot of sympathy for the Black Lives Matter movement.
Righteous anger.
They had the righteous anger, but they didn't have anywhere to go. It just kind of spilled out into society and broke stuff. And then when you saw people trying to actually enact legislative reforms, like Rand Paul got actually attacked by Black Lives Matter activists outside of the Senate when he was trying to pass police reform bills. And so there was just this lack of focus of saying, okay, well, we found an injustice. What do we do about it? Instead of just being angry about it, we have to try to actually fix it in a meaningful, practical way. And that was what was lacking, I think, from that movement that made it not as effective as it might otherwise have been. But I think science fiction is such a good barometer for this sort of thing, because like, if you look at the science fiction from the 50s, 60s, and even into Star Wars in the 70s, people like Isaac Asimov and Arthur C. Clarke were writing about imagined possible futures that could be better. They were writing about the way things could improve in the future. And they were writing about, and I think that's why one of the reasons Star Wars was so successful is because it came out on the heels of a decade of film where everything was small and nihilistic and kind of pointless. But hyper-realism, you mm-hmm. had movies like Five Easy Pieces and Easy Rider and things like that, and Taxi Driver, where it was like, just showed the gritty, yes. boring mundanity of everyday life and how small everything was. And Star Wars came out and said, here's a grand, beautiful vision of not really the future because it happened a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, but like, here's like some escapism and some like imagination for once. And I think people really responded to that. And that's what the science fiction of the previous couple decades before that were. It was about imagining a better tomorrow. And if you look at science fiction now, it's all dystopia. Every single science fiction movie is dystopia. It's look how bad the world is going to be in mm-hmm. the future. And we don't see any kind of hopeful sci-fi anymore. And I think that's a real problem.
Well, Star Wars marches on. And I do believe Star Wars is going to keep giving us stories based in hope. And if they stop doing that, then we've got a problem. Logan Albright, Free the People, where can people stay in touch with you, perhaps buy your upcoming or most recent book?
Well, all of my professional work is on freethepeople.org. That's where you can find my articles and the videos that I've been working on. And then I have a personal website as well, loganalbright.com. And you can find all my additional extracurricular projects, including this book and some music that I do on that site as well. So freethepeople.org and loganalbright.com.
All right. That's it for this week on Beltway Banthas. I promise we're going to be easing into a more regular release schedule here now that the book has reached its conclusion of being written. The deadline is this week for the foreword, which I'm having written by two outside writers, which I'm very excited to announce and talk about more on this show here in the weeks ahead. But we're going to start now really digging into the virtues and themes of Star Wars that Beltway Banthas has always believed in and is now enshrined in How the Force Can Fix the World, Lessons on Life, Liberty, and Happiness from a Galaxy Far, Far Away, which you can pre-order by going to the link in the show notes. It will take you to centerstreet.com, where you can pick a vendor for pre-sale. You can either get it from an indie bookstore pre-ordered for October, or you can go ahead and put in that order on Amazon. I will say that I unfortunately value the Amazon pre-orders the most. It's a kind of just a mechanism, stupid capitalism, in how the New York Times bestsellers list for opening weeks is determined. So if you're, you know, trending on Amazon and you hit a certain number there, that is how you break onto those lists, and it goes without saying. I would love to have this book on that list, so if you have no moral objections to it, pick it up from Amazon, but it is also available anywhere that you get books. My name is Stephen Kent. This has been Beltway Banthas. Please shoot us an email at beltwaybanthas@gmail.com if you'd like to bend my ear about anything Star Wars or politics. You can follow us on Twitter at Beltway Banthas and myself at Stephen_Kent89. I also have a newsletter. It's over on Substack, politicizeme.substack.com. And you can get updates from me, personal stuff, rantings on Star Wars politics and pop culture, and also behind the scenes looks at the making of the book. We'll be back here soon. Until then, may the Force be with you always.